Okay. Well, that's not it, folks. Don't leave. Now, the purpose of being with us this evening is, if you'll remember what Frank had to say about the Washingtonian movement that had a 400,000 or half a million strong membership, but yet 12 years later they disappeared. There was no recorded record of them by that time, primarily because they didn't have what we now know as our second legacy, those things which hold us together. As we mentioned earlier, and especially in the history and again tonight, that in 1941 we had a 400% increase in our membership primarily because of the Saturday Evening Post article by Jack Alexander. And that tremendous growth brought about a lot of problems. And Alcoholics Anonymous by that time knew that we could get sober, but we weren't so sure we could live together. And so I want Frank to tell us about those 40s and what happened up until 1950 and what brought about a need for the 12 traditions. And then when we get through with that, when he gets finished and gets to the International Convention in Cleveland, Ohio in 1950, then we'll briefly go through the 12 traditions. And I think we'll present them in a way that will become a little more meaningful to you, because we're going to maybe talk about the rhythm of Bill's writing. We're going to see that, once again, he likes the number 12. We have 12 traditions. We have 12 concepts. We used to do on Saturday night, we would go through all three of them in pretty good detail, 36 steps. But by the time we got to the concepts, which are primarily those principles which guide our corporate entity and tell how they interrelate with one another, most of you fell out of your chairs. And so we decided that it would be probably a little more beneficial to you if we just sort of focus on holding ourselves together. Because it is now our responsibility, yours and mine, to make sure that this thing perpetuates itself. As Frank said, we're very fragile. We can lose it. As we see individuals lose it, so can groups lose it. Some of us see groups losing it. And the same thing can happen to our fellowship. If it were not for these 12 principles that we're going to discuss in just a few minutes. Now, Frank, if you will, give us some backdrop and some background up to 1950, if you want to use the front of that book or the 12 and 12. And then I want to show the slides, overheads rather. Is that all right with you?
Yep, sure.
So we're kind of loose. We know it's important information. We haven't really figured out the best way to present it, but I think it'll work out.
Yeah, this is kind of
informal.
Is this okay? Yeah, a little experiment here we're going to do. You know, the thing I think, the issue is success can be more corrosive to an organization than failure. You know, I think that's true for me personally. I can be more intoxicated with my successes than with my failures. In my failures, I can get quiet. I can maybe even ask for help. And I might even be able to listen and take some constructive action. But if I'm winning at life, I'm too busy talking. And apparently success in corporations and organizations is intoxicating too. Because those ones that we talked about on Thursday night, the Emanuel groups, the Washingtonians, the Oxford groups, all the groups that went before, they all had parts of what we have today, but they didn't last. And they didn't fail because they were unsuccessful. They failed in a way because they were successful. Their growth carried the seeds of their own destruction in it. And I think that's what we're talking about here today. You know, it's very necessary that I own my own history, that I speak and I say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I think from an organization point of view, from a society point of view, from a fellowship point of view, it's very important that we own our history, that we know what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, and be able to be conscious to the fact that we may have problems with growth that we have to adjust to. And we had big problems with growth as I mentioned, with the Jack Alexander article. You know, suddenly people who were sober 10 minutes were sponsoring a lot of people, you know. And we all know what that's like, you know. And a lot of it was losing its way. And a collective statement had to be made of who we are and to anchor us in our principles as an organization. We knew we had a method for staying sober individually, but did we have a method for holding the organization together through success? You know, I know in my own sobriety, I have to make sacrifices if I'm to stay sober. I can't do what I want when I want, and I can't behave like I can do anything anytime. I have to be careful. And that's also true for us as a society. We can't do anything. This thing is not invincible. It's fragile. You know, we are people who normally do not mix, our big book says. So we have to be careful that we focus on what connects us, not what separates us. And we all know what that's like. We've all been in a gathered AA meeting, like this experience this weekend, when we're focused on what we're about. And we're the only game in town. You can't beat that. We own our own recovery, and we're clear on things that we otherwise would not be clear on. If this was a meeting that was not anchored in the subject of the big book and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, this room would be chaos. You can imagine if we all talked about feelings or our jobs or things troubling us, we wouldn't be able to sit still for a whole day. And I just point that out. That's my experience. It may not be yours. You might have others. But I think when we can stick on the subject that we're about, you can't beat us. You can hear a pin drop when that happens. And that's what the traditions are about. How do we keep this thing at the maximum concentration? And we do it by making sacrifices. In the beginning, the preamble and the 12 traditions really come. The kernel of it comes from the preface to the first edition of the big book. And it starts off by saying we are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. In those days, they had the word honest. In 1967, they dropped the word honest because most of us felt that when we entered AA, we were less than honest. Even if we had a vague desire to stop drinking, it was enough. And it goes on to say we were not allied with any particular faith, sect, denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted. In a way, that's really what our preamble is about now. We're alcoholics. We don't have dues or fees. We have a primary purpose, men and women, not affiliated, do not endorse nor oppose any causes. Virtually all of our traditions are encapsulated in those statements. So it kind of anchors us on what we're about and what we're not about. You know, the fields that we don't get into. And it was felt that Bill, when he saw the growth that was really happening to Alcoholics Anonymous in the early 40s, recognized the fact that we better have a formal, acknowledged, conscious state of principles that we could have to anchor this thing together. And that's when he developed the traditions. He started writing them, as many of you know, in 1946 in the Grapevine. Testing. A lot of people didn't want to hear about traditions. Even now, how many meetings do you, when somebody says we're going to have a tradition meeting, people go, oh, they'd love to get out of there. The only time we hear about the traditions often is when some crime is being committed in the room, and somebody will say, Gloria's violating the sixth tradition, and everybody will look at the window shade to see what crime Gloria is committing, and that's about the extent of our involvement with the traditions. But I think our pain is going to get our attention. You know, just the same as what got my attention with the steps was my own pain. The fact that I couldn't do what I wanted to do, and I agonized over that. And that led me to a new, fresh understanding and a need to explore and really study and take action with the steps. And the same is going to be true with us collectively. When we can't stand ourselves anymore, we're going to rediscover maybe the traditions. You know, when we go to our home group and we're only managed to stay focused on anything for 6 or 7 minutes before we're distracted, we're going to have to blow the whistle and say, hey, look it. Maybe we should rethink this thing. Maybe we should study and find out if maybe the application of the traditions to our meeting will make our groups more effective as a place of healing. Because like you, if you've been around AA for a while, you recognize, as I do, how many people come into AA and how few are able to stay. You know, I often speculate how many millions of people have been through the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, and how many relatively, even after all, what's it, almost 59 years, next month will, June 10th, will be 59 years old. And in the United States, there are a million relative, U.S. and Canada, a million recovered alcoholics. And I must know a million myself, you know. And, you wonder what happens to all of them that come in, you know, and how long we're able to stay. And maybe if we were more focused, perhaps, I'm just speculating along with you, and maybe if we stayed to what we know best, the method for getting and staying sober, and maybe if we were able to make sacrifices in the room and focus on our primary purpose and keep everything that doesn't contribute to that outside the room, maybe we could reach more people at a deeper level and more people we'd be able to retain. I know that I can probably live without drinking again and not going to meetings. For a while anyway. But I don't think I'd be an effective person, and I'm certain I wouldn't be a happy man. You know, I need the community of Alcoholics Anonymous to remain effective and happy. I'm certain of that. Because by my own nature, I'm a depressive, you know, I'll find what's wrong with the picture, you know, and lose my energy and not care, that kind of stuff. I need a society or a community with which to revitalize myself and get a sense of caring, a sense of this thing is wonderful and magic. And that's what I get from my group. And to maximize that, the traditions were offered by Bill in the summer of 1946. And they're statements of principles that all of them call for sacrifice. I'm going to read. Can I read something? Just a little background. I didn't know if you're ready to jump up and do your thing. Okay. This is from AA Comes of Age, page 96. Implicit throughout AA's traditions is the confession that our fellowship has its sins. We confess that we have character defects as a society, and that these defects threaten us continually. A lot of people don't want to hear that we have character defects as a society. I find it refreshing, you know, that we're able to admit we're not perfect and we have to be careful. We're a creation of human beings with the help of God, but we have to be careful. We're not invincible. Our traditions are a guide to better ways of working and living. They're also an antidote to our various maladies. The 12 traditions are to group survival and harmony what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. But the 12 traditions also point straight to many of our individual defects. By implication, they ask each of us to lay aside pride and resentment. They ask for personal as well as group sacrifice. They ask us never to use the AA name in any quest for personal power or distinction or money. The traditions guarantee the equality of all members and the independence of all groups. They show how we may best relate ourselves to each other and to the world outside. They indicate how we can best function in harmony as a great whole. For the sake of the welfare of our entire society, the traditions ask that every individual in every group in every area of AA lay aside all desires, ambitions, and untoward actions that could bring serious division among us or lose us the confidence of the world at large. You know, those are what the traditions are about. They're not abstractions, but they're really tools for living and working in harmony together. So we can really maximize the effectiveness of our connectedness and minimize our separation or distinctiveness. I mentioned that Bernard Smith. I just want to read he was on a trip to England and he heard something on the radio. I'll just read. I have frequently attempted to define the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous with little success. until one day while in England, I listened to a broadcast delivered by Canon Raven, a noted British religious leader. In the course of this broadcast, Canon Raven set forth the conditions of a true fellowship in these words. See if these have any appeal to you, to your understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous. Three conditions are necessary for true fellowship. One, a possession of a common ideal involving a complete release from selfishness and division. Unity, our first tradition. You know, the power of AA when we're ignited on a 12-step call, for example. You know, when we're really focused on what we're doing, carrying this message in a pure way to another person, we're totally released from selfishness and division. Here's the second one is a discharge of a common task big enough to capture the imagination and give expression to loyalty. You know, AA is big enough to capture my imagination. You know, that we have something here that is worthy enough of our most noble parts of ourselves, that we can make sacrifices to do that. And he goes on to say, and the comradeship, the togetherness thus involved as we find out the joy and power of belonging to an organic society and engaging in a whole-time service. When every bit of us is in it, we find it at its fullest extent where the ideal is highest and most exacting, where the task extends and integrates every ounce of our strength and every element of our being, where the comradeship is so solid and deep that we respond one to another without conscious effort. Realize the unspoken need and react to it spontaneously and at once. Under such conditions, all the vitality that we usually waste upon our jealousies and our vanities, upon keeping up appearances and putting other people in their proper place, becomes available for creative use. And we've all been there, or we wouldn't be here this weekend. We all know that we've had moments in our AA life where that kind of concentration of the power of God is in the room and it's palpable. And that's I think, what we serve. And that's what the traditions, I think, magnify. It's able to show life through a different kind of lens. I don't think AA has changed the world for me, but it's given me a different lens in which to view it. A less frightening lens that I'm not so frightened by the world or the things going on out there when I'm in my AA lens. And the traditions are about a way of looking at other people in AA. You know, what we can do together is really unlimited. You know, when we're working in unison together with the creative power that Bernard Smith just described, it's incredible. It's awesome, and we see what AA has done. I read an English medical journal article, and I referred to it a little bit today, but somebody had sent me, and they said where there are lots of AA meetings in a community in England, they virtually have no known heavy side effects of alcoholism. They don't see DTs, delirium tremors, Korsakoff syndrome, bursted livers, all of those things that used to be routine. Now, when you have large numbers of AA meetings there, the hospitals don't see those kinds of things. So we have made a difference. We made a difference in our own lives, and we've made a difference in the illness of alcoholism, the malady of alcoholism. And as you know, it's just beginning. We certainly haven't reached saturation point in carrying the message to alcoholics in this country. Yeah, thanks. John?
Let me just quote one more thing from Bill Wilson. It says, our traditions are guides to a better way of working and living, and they are to group survival what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. Most individuals cannot recover unless there is a group. The group must survive or the individual will not. And if you'll remember, most of us came in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where did we go? We didn't come to the seminar. We went to an AA group. And so it was vital for all of us to have that group in place so that when we got ready to get sober, it would be there for us. Now, I mentioned the rhythm of the steps. And I just want to go briefly through these 12 steps, showing the rhythm that Bill seemed to place in these steps, with the first step saying what the problem was, being powerless. The second step gave us the answer. The solution to that is being power. And then steps 3 through 11 are a program of action which bring about a result. And the result is a spiritual awakening as the result of those steps. So just remember the step. Problem, solution, plan, program of action, bringing about a result. Now, if we look at traditions in the same way, starting with tradition number 1, I believe you can see that this tradition is also a statement of the problem. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. That is the statement of why we're going to have traditions. That's the problem. Remaining together. We could get sober, but we weren't so sure we could live together. And the story in the first tradition in the 12 and 12 about Eddie Rickenbacker is a pointed story about what traditions are all about and why it's important for unity to be in place. Remember, Eddie Rickenbacker's story was that he crashed along with his crew in that sea. Now, the story is they survived the crash, but they still were lost. They were still on a perilous sea. Just like you and I, we survived the crash. We got to Alcoholics Anonymous. We got to that group, but we were still in troubled waters. And it was necessary for those folks to survive that each and every one of them pulled together. They made sacrifices. They acted as a unit. They acted as one. No individual could drink all the water or use all the crackers or whatever it was that they had to survive. And so they were able to survive that crash. It took them, I don't know, about 3 weeks before they were picked up. And one of the crew members died. But they were able to survive. And so this is what the problem is. Common welfare. We need to remain unified. If we can hang together or die separately, that's the message. Now, the second tradition is a solution to that problem, if we look at it perhaps in that way. And it says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So, the solution to any group problems will be found in the authority of a loving God as He expresses Himself in that group conscience as they discuss whatever the problem may be. So a group will remain unified. It will solve its problem if it will rely on a group conscience or a God as they understand Him speaking through that group conscience. And then in those early 40s, it was discovered that we as groups of alcoholics continued to have problems in several areas. There was the he and the she and there was the membership problems, and they were trying to do be all things to all things, and there was affiliation, and there was outside issues, and all of those problem areas. And we knew we were in trouble, especially with the first one that they wrote about, having to do with membership. If you'll remember in the first edition of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, in the preface, it said something about the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stay sober. Now, as the 40s began to develop and groups began to develop, it was discovered that all of these groups, having no experience, were operating groups perhaps like they operated the Woman's Club or the Men's Club or the Moose Club or the Elks Club. That was the only thing they knew. And so they thought that they could determine who would come in and who would come out. And most of the time we were afraid of who we would let in. And so, as a matter of fact, in about the mid-1940s, because so much correspondence was coming into the foundation office about membership, they decided to ask all of those groups that they were corresponding with to send them into New York a list of their protective regulations or membership rules. And so those groups that were corresponding did so. And then as they began to arrive in our general, in a foundation office, they laid out all of these membership rules and regulations on a table. And they began to look over all of them and made a sudden discovery that if all of the rules and regulations, membership requirements were applied at one time throughout the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, our Even our co-founders could not have been members of AA. So even in writing it in the book that the only requirement for membership was a desire to stop drinking, we were still having problems with it. So the first area that they talk about, what happened to that third tradition? Okay, let's see. Third tradition's got to be there. Anyway, it talks about the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That was the first area of problems. And so, if you think about it this way, if we could all agree with that, if we collectively would agree with that statement that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, then we would not have anything to fight about, would we? No arguments, no fighting. We would stay in harmony and we'd stay in unity. Then the next area that we knew we were in trouble was had to do with autonomy. That is, groups determining their own destiny, their own destination, determining what they were. And it says each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. There are all sorts of groups, and everyone in this room probably represents a different type of group. We've got open groups, small groups. We've got and all kinds of groups, offbeat groups, little groups, big groups. It doesn't make any difference. But each group is to avoid any action which might harm other groups in AA. And it says, as Frank read a while ago, we admit that our fellowship has its sins. Groups should take inventory in all decision-making. Groups should ask, would this break any tradition? It also, I think, implies that as we are in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't have to write to some general service office and say, we want to start a group, what's available? Can we start a speaker meeting, a discussion meeting, a step meeting, a tradition meeting, da-da-da? You don't have to do that anymore. Or you never had to do that, so that's what it's implying. Each group has a right to determine its own destiny, even to be wrong. Even to be wrong. And I don't have to concern myself what XYZ group is doing, unless it's my home group. Because it has a right to do exactly what it wants to do. Just because it's not operating the way my group is doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just the way they want to operate. And I have found through my experience a group that's doing a good job will survive, one that won't survive. And that's just the way it is. But they have that right to be autonomous. And I'm going to give Frank an opportunity to talk about the next problem where we might have some problems, called our primary purpose. Okay, Frank.
Fifth tradition, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. There's no other reason for an Alcoholics Anonymous group but to carry this message, as we know from reading the big book, the message contained in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
So that, Frank, if we could all agree in that statement that each group has but one purpose, that is to carry its message to alcoholics who still suffer, if we could all agree upon that, there would be nothing to fight about. There would be no arguing. The group would stay in harmony, would stay in unity. That's not to say that some of us as individuals might want to talk about some other stuff. But that's what the essence of the traditions are about. It's, John, we don't care what you want to talk about unless it's about the subject of recovery from alcoholism. Let's stick to that. And then I have a responsibility to keep that group in harmony and not be disruptive and chaotic. And I also have a responsibility as an individual to understand and know a little bit about these things. See? And I think Frank alluded to this, that usually most of us in the early years, when we hear somebody say, well, we're going to do a tradition meeting, then everybody wants to find something else to do that night. You know what I'm saying? But yet I don't, and it's not because they have any animosity towards the traditions. I just think it's a matter of gaining and gathering the information and knowing how important it is to your survival and mine. That I think what got my passion for traditions was my sponsor impressed upon me the idea that we're standing on the shoulders of those who preceded us. It's our responsibility, those of us who are here, to make sure it's here for our children and our grandchildren. They should be able to expect the same rights of recovery that I had. And for that, you and I are absolutely responsible. And it requested of me, or required of me, to get out of this a mindset of, well, I'll let them do it. They'll take care of it. Them, those, and that were always, they'll, you know, why should I worry about this? It was here when I got here.
A little quote, John, on that. By the way, if you're ever called to lead a tradition meeting, I know your heart will stop and all that. But AA Comes of Age has wonderful essays on each of them. And Bill, just an excerpt from this one, Bill's writings in this. Though AA is obligated to both medicine and religion, we cannot become experts in either. We know that theology is for clergymen and the practice of medicine and psychiatry is for doctors. Certain that we can do together what we cannot do separately, we shall always cooperate but never compete. We shall direct our energies where it counts most. Most AA has but one single purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Bless you.
We do one thing well, and that's why we have a singleness of purpose. We're not an employment agency, a finance company, welfare department, housing bureau, or marriage counseling. We only have one message, and that's recovery from alcoholism. So if we could all agree on that, we wouldn't have much to fight about. This moves us to the,
six.
I can't believe that.
Huh? For this message. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, each group. So, right, from an English construction point of view. Yeah. The group's message. Oh, I see what you mean.
Okay, the sixth tradition, we'll get to that question at the end of this thing. An AA group ought never finance, endorse, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. In the beginning, we wanted to be all things to all things. You know how I know that? Remember the original manuscript that Charlie read yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
In the 12th step, it said something like, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. Like, well, you know, we're going to carry it to everybody, but especially we're going to hit hard on them alcoholics. But they intended to sober up the world. Such was their dreams and aspirations when they sobered up. They wanted to get the Republicans and Democrats to be friends, and management and labor to be friends. They were going to handle the problems of the world. Such was our dreams. But they found very soon that that was not possible. And as has been mentioned, the Washingtonian movement was that example that taught us that. We saw what had happened to them, that they had gotten themselves involved in all sorts of things. They got involved in the slave issue, the wet-dry issue, public speaking issues, how much one was going to make, how much another one wasn't going to make, and who was better than who. So they got involved in all that stuff, and they just got distracted. And then we move to the next tradition, which has to do with moolah. The seventh tradition, each group should be self-supporting through its own contributions. I got it. I just misplaced it. Should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Now, isn't that amazing in view of the fact that in the beginning we wanted a lot of money? Thought we needed lots of money. And John D. Rockefeller probably saved us from ourselves. So that if, as a group, if we could take a position, this position about money, we wouldn't have anything to fight about. Frank, what do you say?
Yeah, well, and if there's not a lot of money, there's not a lot of people worrying about things. I remember when I came into AA, I wondered where the baskets came out and all the, you know, worried about where all the money went. But when I found out how little money there really was, it really wasn't worth a lot of commotion about, was it? And most groups are self-supporting and support the inner groups in the areas and the general service office. I mean, really without too much promotion of that kind of thing, enough money, people feel enough to keep the necessary services of AA in operation. Instinctively, I think.
Our financial needs are very limited. And we could ask ourselves, where in AA does spirituality and money mix? That thing called the basket. We stay poor. Prudent reserve is not to acquire money. You know, I've heard the argument sometimes, well, we need to get a lot, we got to get a prudent reserve, like a year's
operating
or something or another. Yeah. And I mean, that could amount to a few hundred dollars for some groups. And I've always said, well, you're operating on the council of fear that, you know, if something happened, you wouldn't survive. You don't need a lot of money. I think maybe 2 or 3 months of operating capital would be enough as a prudent reserve. But don't use a prudent reserve as an excuse to acquire and accumulate a lot of money. I've seen some groups with so much money, it would be better to become the treasurer of that group and run away with it than to rob
start
a 7-Eleven.
Yeah, then start all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always trusted, Frank Bookman had an expression, where God guides, God provides. You know, and whatever work we need to do, it seems, and if we can, as mentioned earlier, galvanize ourselves into doing a thing, the money will come to achieve whatever good. Like at the General Service Office, we do have a goal of 1 year's operating revenue. So if the energies went out of the groups and the group said, look, we don't need that anymore, there would be enough money to pay the lease for a year, to let people go get other jobs, and to wind down the operation without leaving a lot of bills and dirt behind us. You know, clean up the debris, but don't have a lot of money around, and give people some time to go and look for honest work or whatever.
Thank you. The eighth tradition is really about money also. It says Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And that talks to the idea that we do have certain paid employees in central office and our general service office. And these folks are not being paid to do 12-step work. There's no problem there. All they're doing is making sure the 12-step work can be done. And we as individuals never get paid for our 12-step work. That's the cardinal principle, I guess, underlying this. We make sacrifices because we've become convinced that it was freely given to us, so we freely give to others. And that's the thing that keeps Alcoholics Anonymous rolling over. And in that giving, it's really not about who's getting it. It's about me giving, that I receive by giving. What did I write on the bottom? Okay. And true, alcoholics simply won't listen to paid 12-steppers. There's something about one alcoholic talking to another that carries weight and depth. Mm. One alcoholic going into that cave of darkness with another and leading him out into the light that I think Bill described as what Ebby did for him.
Yeah.
He crawled in that cave with him and led him out.
Well, and when you're not getting something from somebody, you don't have expectancies that they're going to give you money, you really can give them the truth as you see it. And they sense that there's no manipulation going on here, that whatever that man or woman tells you is what they want to tell you. And there's something very riveting at that. I remember my first entry. I entered AA. Wherever we enter, AA is magic and holy ground. And I entered New York Inner Group. And I remember, even though I was dazed and everything else, I remember the people there, and I remember the intensity with which they cared about me. You know, and I'd never seen them before. They were just funny little people who didn't drink at that time for me. I was very separated. And yet I knew that they passionately cared about me in a funny way. And that was, that still sticks in my mind. That's what I want to be for the next person. You know, and that free to care about them without knowing a thing about them, and giving them that sense that they're precious.
The ninth tradition says, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And it's often said in Alcoholics Anonymous, you couldn't organize us anyway. But this chart shows how the flow in Alcoholics Anonymous is and who really, in fact, has the power in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is you and I. And it was designed specifically that way, that we don't have anybody in charge in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have trusted servants. who have limited responsibilities. Nobody has any authority over anybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you really begin to understand it as you get into these traditions that we do march to the beat of a different drummer here. It's not like any other organization on this earth. And I think it becomes soon apparent that, but at the same time, we have a responsibility to make sure that we maintain and carry on this thing. So that if we could agree that we ought never be organized, then we won't have anything to fight about. And as I say, we couldn't organize this anyway. You got a comment on that, Frank?
No, I think. Okay.
Now here's another one. I just love this next one. That if we could absolutely agree on this tradition, I mean, if we just understood it a little bit and agreed upon it, then I don't think we'd have too many problems in Alcoholics Anonymous, but because it speaks to outside issues. Now, taking into consideration what our primary purpose has already been stated, that's recovery from alcoholism, that's our primary purpose, then it seems to me that anything other than or outside of that might be an outside issue. So we just don't get involved in outside issues, in the outside subject matter. So that it says that Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. This is a tradition born right out of the Washingtonian movement. And if you wanted to really split this room up, all I have to say is Democrats and Republicans. You know what I'm saying? Catholics and Protestants, or something like that. And the Catholic view on so and so, and Alcoholics Anonymous is such and such. And I mean, you know, the first thing you know, we'd be throwing rocks at each other. So that if we could agree on this tradition, we would eliminate most of the discord in Alcoholics Anonymous.
One of the fun things about this tradition is it drives newspaper people crazy. Because whatever happens, they call Alcoholics Anonymous to ask our opinion of it. You know, what went on in this TV, or, you know, so-and-so's breaking their anonymity, and what do we think of it? Well, we don't have an opinion on it. You know, it's a very short interview. And they, it makes them crazy.
This looks like a rendition of my group when we have a business meeting. That's me getting collared on the bottom there.
My sponsor says if you can stay sober at an AA business meeting, you can stay sober anywhere.
Next. So we get to the 11th tradition. It talks about our public relations policy. And at what level that we talk about it. It says our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. If we need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. So I think it's important to know that from my point of view, I probably will never have an opportunity to violate that tradition. You know what I'm saying? Because I can't imagine any newspaper coming up to me and asking me for an interview about my being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But this is at the level of public level. And I think, I remember what Dr. Bob Smith said about the other extreme of that is remaining so anonymous in Alcoholics Anonymous that we don't know who we are. And I have a very good, that happens every time we have a seminar. I have people who register who said, my name is Paula. And then they don't give me any last name or anything like that, and then they come to register, and I don't, you know, it sometimes gets chaotic because of that. I think amongst ourselves we should be willing to say who we are. When I say my name is John Williams, I'm breaking my anonymity, but I'm not bothering that tradition one iota. Not one iota. But I think that confuses some people. It's okay for me to break my anonymity. That does not bother or the tradition having to do with the public level. So you see, if we could agree on that principle, we wouldn't have too much to fight about. We have guidelines and direct, you know, we have experience on these kinds of things like TV interviews. If anybody ever got fortunate enough to be asked, they have ways of doing that, how you shadow, how you take an interview and you don't identify yourself. And I'm probably going to have to ask Frank a question later about this, that people of notoriety who are in recovery, that say they're in recovery but don't identify themselves as members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know whether that's a violation. I don't think that's a violation. But anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll probably get a question on that. I might ask it myself. And then, so those principles, those traditions bring about a conclusion, just like the steps did. And the conclusion of those traditions, the result of those traditions is this. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Spiritual anonymity is the payoff for these traditions. The willingness and the ability to give of self, expecting absolutely nothing in return. So that hopefully we can all agree on this statement that says this. What convention was it where we accepted this? Frank, the responsibility?
1965, Toronto.
1965 in Toronto. For those of you who can see that, let's say it together. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA to always be there, and for that, I am responsible. That is my hope, that having gone through that, that statement means a little bit more than it would have meant an hour ago. So we see individually how we have a responsibility to hold it together. And we can't rely or give that responsibility to anyone else. We have to own it for ourselves. We have to own it for ourselves. And in the study of our history and the study of these simple little traditions, it gives us a sense of ownership and creates some passion in our life for this thing that saved our lives. And I don't think I've ever run into anybody who would willingly want to violate our traditions. It usually, like all other things, comes out of usually out of ignorance about what's going on. And usually most folks informed as to traditions, they usually agree to not buck them.
Interestingly enough, somebody said when we enter AA, we know more about the traditions than we know about the steps. Interesting. We know it's anonymous. We know they're probably not going to charge us anything. You know, you have a lot of dim understandings about our traditions. But whereas I knew nothing about the steps. I mean, it's after you get in there, they tell you you have to change your life after you get in. But in I'm going to read something from the Bill's essay on the 12th, which the 12th, of course, is the summary, the payoff for practicing the other 11. And Bill says, because I myself have always had strong tendencies toward the pursuit of prestige, wealth, and power, all of AA's traditions have had borne down on me with great force. You remember the episode back in our living room on Clinton Street. That was the time when my group told me I could never become an AA professional. With nearly every tradition, much the same has happened. At first, I obeyed because I had to. I would have lost my standing in AA if I had not. After a while, I began to obey because I saw that the traditions were wise and right. While I conformed because it was right to do so, I still resisted inwardly. This was particularly true of anonymity. Today I hope I have come to a time in my AA life when I can obey because I really want to obey, because I really want the traditions for myself as well as for AA as a whole. Therefore, each of our 12 traditions is really an expression of the deflation that each of us has to take, of the sacrifice we shall all have to make in order to live and work together. Dr. Bob was essentially a far more humble person than I. In some ways, he was sort of a spiritual natural, and this anonymity business came rather easily to him. He could not understand why some people should want so much publicity. In the years before he died, his personal example respecting anonymity did much to help me to keep my own lid on. I think of one affecting instance in particular, one that every AA ought to know. When it was sure that Dr. Bob was mortally afflicted, some of his friends suggested that there should be a suitable monument or mausoleum erected in honor of him and his wife, Anne, something befitting a founder and his lady. Of course, this was a very natural and moving tribute. The committee went so far as to show him a sketch of the proposed edifice. Telling me about this, Dr. Bob grinned broadly and said, God bless them, they mean well. But for heaven's sakes, Bill, let you and I get buried just like other folks. A year after his passing, I visited the Akron Cemetery where Dr. Bob and Ann lie. The simple stone says not a word about Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people may feel that this wonderful couple carried personal anonymity too far when they so firmly refused to use the words Alcoholics Anonymous even on their own burial stone. I, for one, think not so. I, for one, do not think so. I think that this moving and final example of self-effacement will prove of more permanent worth to AA than any amount of public attention or any great monument. You know, that's the kind of legacy that we've inherited from our co-founders, that they really wanted to be just like other people. And be which Dr. Bob always used, that they were a link in a chain of alcoholics trying to help one another. Thanks.
Thanks. And you mentioned the word legacy. Our second legacy was accepted in 1950 at the International Convention in Cleveland, as well as was our first legacy. And the definition of a legacy is something that was given to us. Back to these traditions, if we look at that rhythm once again, we see that same rhythm prevailing here that was in the steps, with the first tradition stating the problem of unity, the second tradition stating that God in the group was a solution to our problems, that the 3rd through 11th tradition are the non-actions, the things if we could agree upon not to do, they would bring about a result, and that is called spiritual anonymity within the groups, that groups could stay sober. They would stay alive and vibrant and able to accept those who come to our groups for sobriety. And in one of our pamphlets, I think it's the group handbook, that it is suggested that groups take an inventory periodically, maybe once a year, and you ask yourself those questions which are already laid out for you to see if your group's doing the things that it needs to do in order to make sure that we carry the message to the sick and suffering alcoholic, because that is our only purpose. That's the only reason we exist. And so now we have a few minutes left, and at this time, if there's anyone who has a question they'd like to ask Frank about anything, it's time to do that. I have some cord here that'll reach about anywhere. If anybody has it. Now, you had a question. I want you to go ahead and ask that. Where's our taper? He needs to turn this thing on. I'll come up here and get one. No, wait a minute. No, that's not going to work. What was the question? Frank will repeat it. Frank, you want to repeat that question and respond to it?
Yeah, the question concerned the wording, the specific wording of the fifth tradition. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I think when you read the whole essay, it becomes clear what it means. Although I can understand your overview, your feeling that might be a little less than clear, you know, a little. Yeah. So someone else might have a some view on that, but I wasn't there when they wrote these.
if you will, just come up towards the center here and grab this mic, since this is being taped. Who had their hands raised here? Oh, you wanted, okay. That's all right. We'll take care of that. I had a question. Yes. Frank, my name is John. I'm an alcoholic. I'm showing them how we do this, okay? What was my question about? At the public level, when you see a person of notoriety who is in recovery, And says to the commentator that he is, you know, we understand you used to have some problems with drinking, you're not drinking anymore. He said, yeah, I'm in recovery. That's not a violation of the tradition, is it?
Yeah, my own opinion, and by the way, I'm no expert, and it really doesn't matter what I think. Just as a preface here, what I think of the traditions, it's what we think. You know, there's a group conscience involved in the traditions. In this room, how many of us there are, it's what we believe are the meaning of the traditions. And, of course, it comes better if we're informed, then we know the history and the value of these things, that we can appreciate them more and describe them for, but it really doesn't matter. I think the description you made, John, he has not violated the letter of the law as far as traditions are concerned. However, the issue would be the spirit. If the worst, in my judgment, if the person is asserting that I somehow did this magical thing myself, it's a no-win situation. If the assertion is I've recovered from alcohol myself without the aid of anybody, I mean, if that's the impression the person wants to make, I think that's as fallacious and as dangerous as the other end saying I used Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's a personal feeling. I think to get into any of that would be difficult for me. Yeah. You know, I just wouldn't do it. So the ego's an incredible thing, an intoxicating thing. And if you start taking credit for your recovery in any way, real or implied, it's tough.
Okay. We're waiting for the next person.
Here's another
step
question.
Step up to the mic.
Well, I have a question.
You remember when you get to the mic.
You said there was a man, and I can't remember his name, did something for Europe that was the same thing that we do in our program. But you said it so fast, I didn't catch what you said. Remember what you said about...
What did I do? Oh, the Oxford group?
That was
Frank Bookman?
Yes.
Yeah.
What did he do for Europe?
The reconciliation he made between using the principles of the Oxford group, he was able to create an environment where reconciliation could take place between Germany and France after World War II. And that's really what the steps do for us, to have a reconciliation with ourselves, with conflicts in ourselves. I mean, he used the same principles, I think, or with restitution or amends, that we can have a healing with people we used to quarrel with if we use the principles embodied in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, these spiritual tools. Is that clear? Yeah, he applied the principles that are contained or embodied in the steps to an international struggle or conflict. And the same way we apply them to our internal conflicts or to conflicts we have with other people. The spiritual tools, in this case, seem to work. That may not
right
be clear. I'm sorry.
Hi, my name's Elizabeth. I have a question regarding all the shows that we're seeing on television lately where they are alcoholics and they are in recovery and they have AA meetings and they have the slogans out and they talk about this and they talk about that. And I've seen that there's one specific show on television that's the nature of the show.
Mm.
And I've seen that in other shows, series, and I was wondering how they can do that.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I was really shocked the first night I saw this show. I don't know. I was really shocked, but I don't know. I guess it is. Is it up to the? I don't know. Personally, I guess if it helps somebody, it would be great. But at the same time, if I saw that and I saw the stuff about God and I didn't really know what the heck it was about, it might keep me from coming in here.
Hmm. Thank you. I really don't care to express an opinion on you. Don't think it'd be helpful. Someone else might have an opinion. John, do you have an opinion on
you
that?
You bet I do.
Okay.
But I'm not going to speak about it.
Oh.
I got an opinion about everything. Come on, Kevin, up to the mic and ask the question. What is it, Donna? The steps. I got you.
A question about the fifth tradition, and in the small amount of groups that I'm in right now, there's Yeah, I'd call it almost an argument going on about I'm an alcoholic and a. And as soon as the and is done, we go on at length about and a, and never about the alcoholism. And the old timers are flailing. The newcomers are crying, you can't keep us out. And I'm frightened. As an alcoholic, I mean, I need to keep to the primary purpose, but I'm also not the savior of AA per se. And this whole idea, you know, in the fourth tradition where we should have a group conscience, you know, like finding out to take a group inventory. I don't even know how to even begin or how to function in that capacity.
There's a booklet called, a pamphlet called the AA Group. It's orange. And it has a suggested topics for inventory. My own group, by the way, I'm a member of the Oxford group, meets on West 84th Street on Monday and Wednesday at 7:30. I urge you all to come by. and we just took an inventory. For a lot, that's the same reasons. And I think, all we have to do, I really think it's consciousness. I really liked what you said. You're aware of this. The danger is when we're not aware what's going on. You know, we're sort of feel a disease, but we're not clear on what's producing it. I think if we become clear that when people say and an assertion is really, I offer this to people I sponsor that do that. And one who's 8 years sober still does it. I wonder if you're asserting I'm different, I'm special, I'm this extra thing, I need more attention. I mean, that's where I'm coming from, because every time you add an and, you distinguish yourself more from the other people in the room. And the separation begins, just as you said. And often the people you need most in the room, the people with sobriety, get fed up and they leave. I think they're wrong, as Charlie does, for getting up and leaving. But nevertheless, the reality of it is they leave. They feel they're not wanted there, that things are changing, blah, blah, blah. They go into their death dance. And the people who are most valuable in the room for a critical mass of sobriety are gone. So you have everybody. The average AA meeting has 50% of the people in the room are sober less than a year. That's the reality of the average AA meeting. So if those people are running the meeting and speaking 80% of the time, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have a room that's run by, and the message is going to be as understood by people, 50% of whom speak 80% of the time at a meeting, and that's going to be the message of that, which frequently is less than focused, as you know, does not carry this message, and it really becomes not a place of anchored or healing. It becomes a babble, which is really what happens. And groups die because of that. And so all we need, just like the steps, all we need is to become conscious of that sin or what Bill talks about, character defect in the group, talk about it, and expect God to help. Because once that's explained to people, I think, in a loving way, that you are welcome here, but focus on what's going to connect us, not what separates us. Most of them get it, and you see it happens even without saying anything. Usually if they're there for a period of time, they get clear. I think if you're, unless you're an alcoholic, we're boring. You know, I don't think, people come to AA 2 and 3 years who are not alcoholics. I mean, that's my experience. You know, you're just not interested in us, you know. But it's getting through the first 2 or 3 years that can be hard until a person becomes clear on what they are. But that's my observation. Somebody else might have.
Just part B to that, the fifth tradition, its message is the 12 steps.
Of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only message we have,
right,
carry
okay.
These principles, as far as I
So saying that, I mean, our group, a group can't have another message. I mean, you know, we can't be the Vietnam Vet Alcoholic Association. I mean, it is, period. It is the 12 steps. That's it. And, I mean, there is no message of a group. It's just AA, period.
Yeah. And the only purpose for an AA group is that very message that you described, the 12 principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 steps. Larry?
Well, they're just coming back. Go ahead, Larry.
You want to undo that thing that happened earlier?
You want to back out?
Do we have that power? I don't want anybody to leave. My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic and now a henpecked husband.
Oh, good.
No, very happily married, I must say.
Good for you.
What time is it?
May it always be thus.
Yeah. My question is, I heard this secondhand, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on it. I believe the GSR, which is located in New York City.
GSO.
GSO, I'm sorry.
Service Office? Yeah.
I had heard, well, actually, I'd like you to elaborate, if you would, on exactly how it's run. And also, I had heard that there was... What? Okay.
Exactly?
No one knows.
Entirely ready?
How about a general overview?
Yeah.
And also, I had heard that there was quite a large surplus of monies there. And I was curious how that worked and why that would exist, if it does actually, if it is that way.
Good. The office is a physical place. It's currently at 475 Riverside Drive. Approximately 93 people work there in the general, what's called the General Service Office in the Grapevine. As mentioned a little bit in the traditions, in 1955, Bill and Bob turned over to the fellowship the operation of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the same time, a general service conference was created. 91 delegates from the U.S. and Canada are members of that conference, together with 21 trustees and 16 staff members, paid staff members. I'm a staff member. That 131, or whatever that adds up to be, are members of the General Service Conference. And they convene for 1 week per year in April in New York to discuss an agenda that's prepared by the 91 delegate areas on topics, policies, issues, whatever they want on those things. And they're divided up to within 10 or 11 conferences, like public information, finance, the Grapevine has as a committee, cooperation with the professional community, literature, treatment facilities, correctional facilities. There are a number of these committees. So whatever the topic is, they're assigned to these committees, which usually has about 8 to 10 delegates on each of those committees. And they ponder those issues, and they make a recommendation during this week in New York to the general body of the conference, the 131 members, and they vote on these things. I think this year there were 41 conference actions that came forth from this body for this year. There are two ways the office is supported, by group contributions, and don't hold me on these figures, they're just rough figures as I recall. About 50% of the income of about $12 million a year comes from directly from group contributions. We only take money, as the traditions point out, from Alcoholics Anonymous groups, contributions, about $6 million, I believe. About $6 million, or roughly that, comes from literature sales, our big book, our pamphlets. There are four or five books, pamphlets. The literature comprises the other income. And as mentioned, in 1953, Bill established 1 year's operating revenue to be a prudent reserve. As you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous is run really on corporate poverty to a large extent. For a worldwide operation that's available in 145 countries, $12 million is not a lot of operating revenue for a year. That's just my judgment from my own business experience. Some of you others may have a different view. But it's not an enormous amount of money, because most of the work, as John pointed out, is done on a voluntary basis. The work of the office is merely to support, and only to support, the AA groups. There are about 50,000 groups in the U.S. and Canada. The in a the way I describe it, and some other people may describe it, the General Service Office is a clearinghouse for group experience. The only thing we have to share there is group experience. We don't share opinion. You know, if you ask us about, for example, there are 1,200 subject files in the office. You know, whatever you write in and ask for, there's a file on it. Unruly members, dogs biting members, and whatever. There is literally, whatever sin your group is committing, it's been done before. And there's group experience on that. And that's what we share. We're a clearinghouse for an anonymous program. You know, your group lasts an hour and a half, and then it vanishes. There's no evidence. Well, while your group isn't there, we are the visible part of an invisible program. We take the calls. We help people, guide people to our meetings. We help share group experience. What's happening in Oregon is shared with what's happening in Southern California, Southern Florida, wherever. And that's basically the service of that's performed by the General Service Office.
Thank you. Well done, Frank. Well done.
And it didn't take me 2.5 hours, which it often does. Yes, sir.
What'd you leave out?
I've never needed a
microphone. My name is Wayne. I'm an alcoholic.
Roy.
With all the insane asylum treatment centers that we have today, just the opposite of that, we have a lot of them that have mandatory meetings that have to go to groups. So they go to outside groups. In our area, we have a group that voted that they weren't allowed to come to this group because they were taking up too many chairs. I was wondering if that was a violation of tradition, or do we get to pick and choose who comes to our meetings and when they come, as long as they have that desire? But they, this certain treatment facility was left without a group to go to, because a group took a group conscience and said, hey, they're just taking up too many chairs, our regulars can't come. We don't want them in here. And the next time they came, they wouldn't allow them. And I stood up and argued this. And I would just like some opinion to see if I had a right or a wrong part in this.
Yeah. Well, you know, that issue has to be decided at the local level. And how it's done is, if that happened in my area, I would call my district committee person. I would contact my GSR. I would contact my area delegate and say, hey, look it, this is the problem we have. Sometimes there is a problem where a small group can be inundated. You know, the little van, there's a group meeting of 12 people, and the van comes out and spills out 20 hostile people who don't want to be at the AA meeting, but they're being mandated to be there. And the little group, first of all, they eat all the cookies and all that stuff. And they do it in a hostile way. So I understand, I've been at those kinds of groups, where, you know, there's not going to be a lot of healing that night. You know, there has to be some kind of cooperation where we go to treatment centers and say, hey, look it, you have to spread these people out over a cross section. So the little anchor of hostility is not going to tip over. You know, there are more sober people in the room happily than there are these negative people, and they can bring them this way rather than the other way. So it's really working out this cooperating without affiliating, you know, and creating and supporting an environment where we all can prosper spiritually. And I think we do that. I think we're largely successful. Now, there are times when the system breaks down and, you said, she said, they said, and, you know, it's a mess. But generally speaking, if we cool down and have a group conscience meeting at a wider level and disperse the problem over a larger number of groups, those things are handled very easily and very successfully. I remember in Maryland, the state mandated that if you had a drunken driving arrest, the DWI, you had to go to so many, I could be wrong on the specifics of this, but you had to go to AA meetings. Now, there were 5,300 members of AA, I believe, at the time in Maryland, and the state had 50,000 drunken driving people descending on these 5,300 people on a regular basis with a lot of anger, you know, you show me kind of thing. So, I mean, there was going to be friction there. So a different kind of an agreement had to be worked out so that it was spread more evenly and the concentration, the high concentration of people being sent to AA was softened somewhat.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Go to the mic.
Did you mess up those soft slides, by the way? Do you want to confess?
No, I don't do slides.
Good.
I've got one question is what the other person was talking about, where people say, like, I'm an alcoholic and whatever,
yes.
Whatever. Okay, it was pointed out to me a long time ago that page 19 in the big book, where it talks about, you know, because some people would say that they're an alcoholic and whatever, and they'd get kicked out of the rooms. Well, sometimes they never come back.
Mm.
They could drink, they could drug or whatever and die and not come back. So you can do tough love gently, too,
mm-hmm.
You know, not after the meeting's over with. But it says in here, what was pointed out to me was for me to have, it says most of us have a sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions are attitudes which makes us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. So that's what was told to me when people say that they're an alcoholic and whatever. Talk to them, tough love nicely after the meeting, but don't embarrass them and kick them out so that way they might not ever come back in. And then just, you know, tell them to talk about alcoholism in the room and talk to other people after the meeting about their other problems or go to another 12-step program for their other problems. But what I really, another thing that I really, really wanted to talk about is I was really, really excited that Joe had said yesterday when I came to the meeting, and it's like about the Tradition 1, about the unity. It reminds me of Tradition 1, the unity. Joe was saying, like, AA is a program of recovery, you know, and which is in the Alcoholics Anonymous Food Book and in the 12 and 12. And the definition of a program is a sequence of events. And the AA Big Book is a program of action. And this is what we need to make sure the message we are carrying when we go to meetings is that we are carrying this message that's in the Big Book and in the 12 and 12 and not strictly our opinions. And he was talking about, like, a lot of times these people from the treatment centers come in and start talking about what they were taught in the treatment center, which is not the, out of the Big Book in the 12 and 12. So then the old-timers, you know, would get mad and leave the meeting. And therefore, since a lot of people are going into the treatment centers and going into hospitals and not getting fed the Big Book in the 12 and 12, they're being fed the philosophy of treatment centers, a lot of times that's what's taken over in our fellowship. So we, the people that really know that AA, Big Book, and 12 and 12 need to sponsor more and need to share more of their hope, strength, and experience from the Big Book and the 12 and 12 in the meeting room. He was explaining that the fellowship is not the same as the program. And that's what he was explaining last night. And I'm really glad that he expressed that. Instead of getting mad at these newcomers, you know, for me, it's my responsibility to go out and to sponsor them and to talk to them after the meeting instead of getting mad because they weren't taught the right way in treatment. And I see a lot of that going on locally since I live in Fort Lauderdale, so I'm really glad that he expressed that the fellowship is not the same definition of a program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm glad he expressed, because it's true, it's our responsibility to make sure that this is, that AA goes by the 12 and 12 in the Big Book. And that's why I like to go to a lot of Big Book meetings and 12 and 12 meetings, but to go to the open discussion meetings so that way I can carry the message to these other people to show them the solution in this Big Book in 12 and 12.
Thank you very much. That was helpful. Brian?
This is more experience than anything else. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brian. I'm a lot of things. You know, I'm a lot of things. And I'm a young man, and I can, most of you can probably tell that alcohol wasn't the only thing that brought me here. Alcoholics Anonymous was just my kind of, you know, this was my cup of tea. I mean, I was self-centered to the extreme. Defined as hell. I walked on everything and anybody I ever came in contact with. I mean, I didn't follow any of the rules. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't have any rules. doesn't cost me anything to come. I can drink as much coffee and eat as many cookies as I want. I can talk about anything I want to pretty much because, you know, pretty much nobody, you know, nobody enforces anything. There isn't any police. There isn't any, So I proceeded to act like I always acted as an alcoholic, and that was to walk all over the groups that I went to and to talk about whatever I wanted to talk about and to say whatever I wanted to say, when I had the courage to say anything. And eventually, and it probably should have happened sooner, but eventually somebody did explain to me. I mean, I never wanted to do anything to hurt Alcoholics Anonymous. My life was on the line when I got here. And I would have never wanted to do anything that would have hurt Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't know what hurt Alcoholics Anonymous. I was brand new. Somebody needed to pull me aside and explain to me. And we need to talk about the traditions in our groups. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous exists in AA groups. It doesn't exist in AA meetings. The groups need to be clear about what it is that we're doing, and the group members do. I know we had, I introduced myself as an alcoholic in an AA meeting. If I went to someplace else for some other problem and I had that problem, I would probably introduce myself to whatever was appropriate to their primary purpose. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm... But I had to learn that. I had to know that. I didn't know that. I mean, and I expressed that in my group so that members of my group know how I feel about that. It isn't the law, but I think that, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think that people understand. I understood that when it was put to me that way. So, and people in my home group, do that. And I think that that's important, but we need to, we need to let them know. As a group, we need to let them know. We need to make sure that the members of our group know, and we express these ideas so that does happen. It can spread from there. But if we don't talk about traditions and we let people like me come into Alcoholics Anonymous and walk all over you, then that's what you're going to have. And we need to, not throw them out and not get up and leave, but take them by the hand. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian.
Good.
Hi, I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I think the essence of the problem that we face is not the newcomer. It's the person that keeps coming in, and after it's explained to him, he keeps doing what he wants to do, or she keeps doing what he wants to do. I think that's what the nature of the problem is, as I see it.
Bill, speak into the mic.
When I came into the program, and there's a lot of Bills in the program, and I was looking for a moniker to be different. I was envious of my sponsor. His name was Duff. Wasn't that many Duffs, so I was trying to be cross-addicted or duly addicted so you'd remember me, that I'd be different, And I asked him about that one day, and I said, what should I be, like that, rather than just Bill, So I was on the telephone with him, and he said, well, Bill, he says, you're an alcoholic, right? I said, yes. So he said, well, say your name's Bill, you're an alcoholic. I said, yeah, that's okay, but that was, like, boring, that didn't have any life to it, So he says, you smoked a little marijuana, didn't you, Bill? I said, yes. He says, why don't you say your name's Bill, you're an alcoholic and a marijuana smoker? So I started to really get grooved now with this stuff. And he said, Bill, you did a little cocaine, right? I said, yeah. He says, why don't you say your name's Bill, you're a marijuana user and cocaine user? Then he said, Bill, you bounce some checks when you're out there? I said, yeah, Duff, He says, why don't you say your name's Bill, you're an alcoholic, you're marijuana smoke or cocaine using a check bouncer. So he said, let me ask you a question, Bill. Did you wet the bed at all when you were drinking? I said, yeah, Duff, I did. He said, so say your name is Bill, you're an alcoholic or marijuana user, cocaine using a bed wetter. By this time I'm on the phone, I don't know what the hell he's trying to tell me, And he ended it up saying to me that, why don't you just say you're an alcoholic? And we'll take care of that problem. And maybe the rest of them will go away. And, as funny as that is, that took a lot of pressure off me. And he gave me what I didn't want, but what I really needed. And that's why I'm Bill and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks a lot.
Very nice to hear.
Well, I guess I'll confuse everybody. Hi. My name is Adrian. I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I come to AA meetings because that's where I get my strength and my understanding of what I need to do for my problem. And if that upsets anybody, I'm sorry. But I am not an alcoholic, but this is where I found me in AA, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is where I will come until the day I die. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict also, and my name is Roslyn. And for me personally, I have to say that because I have to remember that I have a problem with alcohol. Alcohol does not do the same thing for me as the drugs. I guess you said, well, why don't you go to meetings for that? This is where I found God at. And as a newcomer, I don't know anything about anything. And here I come here, I look on the wall, and I see something say that if I work these steps and practice these principles in all my affairs, my life will get better. You tell me that the big book is designed to enable me to find a higher power that will solve all my problems. So as a newcomer, I'm confused. I mean, being around the rooms a few 24 hours, somebody come in and say they're an addict and an alcoholic. As long as they are getting in touch with God and bettering their lives, why should I give a shit about how they introduce themselves? You know, as long as they're changing, they're building a relationship with a higher power, why am I so caught up into that? Why is that threatening me? Why is it causing me to get so out of whack? You know, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Thanks. My name's Don. I don't know. Did you want to respond?
Yeah, if you'd like to, sure.
No, I don't want to respond to that. I want to say something else.
What did you say?
Although I would say that I think our primary purpose is to work on the alcohol. And although these other things are drugs, I think our primary purpose is alcohol. And if you're working on drugs, there's also other programs that can help with that. But I you know, it's okay to mention it, I think. I don't think it should be a primary discussion factor in our group. But that's my own belief.
Thank you. Ma'am?
I did want to raise my other issue.
Oh.
Which I originally set up here.
Only one issue.
Sorry, I don't know. Whatever. My concern is, I guess this is directed to the general office, and I was wondering if there's any thought up there or any effort to, in essence, get the program back towards some of the general principles that the program was founded on and some of the general stuff. I guess an example of that was, like, you know, with the 12th tradition, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. When I came in, that was always said at the end of the meeting, and it was also said that means that it's okay for me to say I'm an alcoholic and I was at this meeting, but it's not okay for me to say you're an alcoholic and you were at this meeting. I mean, little things like that. I don't know if there's any effort to revive those or keep those going or what. I don't know. They just seem to be falling out to me.
Mm.
It's just a thought.
Well, there's
and if they're not, I think they should. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, there are, and if you have a particular interest in that kind of stuff, I urge you to get involved in your local area committees, because you know, people are very aware that we're losing our way as far as the traditions are concerned, and there's a lot of concern of that at almost every level of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Now we're going to have to begin to limit this thing. We can't go all night. If any of you want to continue the discussion with Frank personally, he'll be up here till probably midnight. But we just, in the interest of those who are here who have obligations and commitments, we want to end at a reasonable time. I don't mind, and I'm sure Frank will stay here all night if he has to. But let's get real quick to the two or three that are standing there, and let's move on. Let's not anybody else get up, okay? So we can end in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Hi, my name is Van. I'm an alcoholic, and I'd like to make a reservation for 1204 tonight down here. Very, very briefly, for I hear this discussion all the time, and I've been part of it, and we have groups that have put into place certain suggestions or group conscience that we do things a certain way. Anyone who comes to AA meetings, to an open meeting, as far as I'm concerned, of course, is welcome. And anyone who was fortunate enough to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and find at open meetings a solution for another problem, to me, is blessed. Because as I understand it, and I think I go back to the writings of Dr. Dole, who was on our board of trustees at one time, Vincent Dole, who was involved with the methadone clinics, who made it very clear that Alcoholics Anonymous is an experiential program. You know, it's experience, strength, and hope. And I think we have a commitment to those people who are coming into AA meetings and thinking that this is the answer, that may indeed be disappointed. We're not doing them a favor. We're certainly not doing them a favor throwing them out. That's unconscionable. But we are not doing them a favor by not pointing them possibly in a more clear direction where the experience will be better. To protect them as well as ourselves, I think we have to make clear the primary purpose here and the primary purpose of each other 12-step group.
I'm a real alcoholic. My name's Stuart. This is what's happening a lot of AA groups and meetings, the controversy. And that says it in our preamble to stop the controversy. I remember at the gratitude meeting, we had a good speaker, and he shared on that. In fact, he made a comedy. He said, what it would be if somebody said they stood up in a room and said, I'm an alcoholic and a nose picker. You know, just like that, you know. As far as I'm concerned, anybody is welcome into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's in that third tradition, if they have a desire to stop drinking. And I hear a lot of people, the drug addicts, cocaine addicts, I don't care what addicts, pills, whatsoever else, and I always ask them, well, why do you come to Alcoholics Anonymous? They say, because the recovery's here. It's not in those other fellowships. And I turn around and look to them, well, why don't you go back to those fellowships so you could show them that you could recover and build up that fellowship? They never seem to have an answer for me. I just want to point that out, okay? I only have basically one question. It's in regards to the big book. Are they going to expand that big book and make, you know, like more stories in it? That's what I heard. Thank you.
One of the things considered at this year's General Service Conference by the Literature Committee was a fourth edition, which would have alternate, additional or revised stories. And it was felt at this particular time there was no need for a fourth edition. We would stay with the third edition, unchanged.
Hi, my name is Ed Farrell. I am an alcoholic. Hey. I'm from Melbourne, and anybody wants to look me up and give me a 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock phone call, they're welcome. My machine would be happy to listen to you. The reason I came up is, my dad had over 45 years in a program and in Brooklyn, New York, a Bay Ridge section, and he died in 1987. I love him dearly. He never said much to me about my alcoholism, but to get to the point, when this controversy came up and I saw people coming into the rooms, and in places in California and so forth, there were some very strict groups, and my person said they weren't an alcoholic. They asked them to leave the meeting, and they were very harsh and unkind and unloving to them. And I spoke to him about this, and I got some good information. He sent me a pamphlet from NA, a letter from NA to Alcoholics Anonymous, that talk about what came about and why the separation. It's my understanding that Bill was faced with this problem early on, when I think it was out in California where the druggies were coming in to AA, and it felt the message was being diluted. And where this thing came from is not one of anger or hatred or get all excited or throw you the hell out of the meeting type concept. The idea of the separation and of singleness's purpose was one of love and humility. You know, they knew that they were alcoholics. They were not drug addicts in a pure sense, that the real alcoholic uses drugs. We know that. But not drugs in a pure sense. And the alcoholism was free and legal. The drugs were illegal and so forth. That there were differences there. And they said, isn't it presumptuous of us to think that we in this 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have the answer for anybody else? You know, and like I have to say to myself in another case, you know, I love you so much that I must make you the dignity of making your own mistakes when I have Al-Anon situations. So they look at the people, and they say, you know, we don't really have the answer for you. Maybe we do, but we don't know, because we know it works for Alcoholics Anonymous, but we don't know if it works for you. So here, take our program. Help yourself, you know, to anything we have. We cooperate with you in any way we have, but we can't give you something we don't have. So to come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's an open meeting, and people let you say anything you want, and I hear those people talk for 25 minutes, you know, like I'm doing now, you know, and so forth, don't know very much, you know. But that's okay. But I just wanted to point out that there was, it wasn't a nasty thing, even though some people implemented that way and some groups do implement it that way. What was basically behind, now I don't have to tell you, I could use Overeaters Anonymous. If you have an eyes, you can see that. But I didn't say I was an overeater. I didn't say I'm a ukulele player and fought, you know, I didn't say all that. So what the point is, that that's not why we're there, and if it works for somebody and it's an open meeting, God love you. But please don't understand what we're trying to do here. We're not we're trying to solve the world of all our problems, and that's what these traditions are all about, telling us don't get so big that you know everything, that you can tell drug addicts and gamblers and everything else what to do if you don't have any experience with that. What's offered in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is our experience, strength, and hope. Thank you very much.
One more.
I'm a recovering alcoholic just for today. My name is Vernon.
Hey, Vernon.
Oh, boy. I didn't come to talk about that other stuff y'all talking about. I came with a question again. I think somebody started out with a question. But,
yeah, that's right. We did.
I don't know how we got to this point here, but I want to go back to the question and answering period if I can. Last year when I came, this is my first time, my second time coming here, and I was listening to Joy and Charlie talk about the Salvation Army marching band, and they were looking for a black man. Now, this might start some controversy. And when they said that last year, I looked around the walls. I said, damn, something missing. And I remember in this book that they got some us in here now. And what I want to know, do you have any pictures of the guy Jim they talk about in this book?
Jim Scott? Is that
this, who it is? On page 483, they talk about Jim, the physician, the original AA's black, first black groups.
I don't know if there are any pictures of him that I know of. I don't think we have any in our collection.
I would love to see, like, what it was.
I heard that.
So, thank you. That was the question I had.
Vernon. Your assignment, should you choose to take it, is get us one. We'll blow it up and have it here next year. And a caption about who he is and what he did for us. Good. Okay.
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. I got something for you real quick. And I identify myself as an alcoholic because I am an AA. But when I came to your fellowship, I was a drug addict. But I caught the disease of alcoholism in here. That's where I got it. So I can argue both sides of the issue. I choose not to do that today. I believe in staying in the solution, and that's what I was taught to do. See, we have a common solution. That's what I do. My question is, I heard you say something about the GSO and the Grapevine. I'm Grapevine rep for my group. And I have an area rep, a district rep who knows nothing about it, and area rep who knows nothing about it, and I've mailed it in New York, and I got a bunch of pamphlets. I guess my question is, what is the GSO can do for Grapevine, or do they?
What does the...
GSO do for Grapevine, or do they? You said something about Grapevine being in the GSO office.
Yeah, well, we both occupy the same office. We're both independent arms of the General Service Board. There are two operating entities of the General Service Board. One is the General Service Office, which handles the publishing of the books and services the group. The other is production of the AA newsletter, Grapevine. So they're separate. And I don't know what you mean by do for. We work together with them.
Okay, that's my question.
Yeah, we're in the same building on different floors, but we work very closely with them. Did you have something specific? Well, if you give me your name, and I'll bring it up to Ames, and he'll send you the material.
Okay, thank you very much. We've had an interesting evening. We appreciate all the comments. We got a nice way of closing our meeting with the saying of the Lord's Prayer.